Chino an independent bookshop rich. There rose all the sadness of the post-war years in his streets, the cynical weariness of his protagonists, one can hardly call them heroes, the slipshod raffishness of the institutionally entitled. It was the world of my unaware childhood, more Graham Greene than Fleming, but somehow free of Greene's depressive atmosphere. All the humour food groups were represented. Situations were funny. Language was funny. Dialogue was funny. And there were actual bona fide gags. To be clear, I knew then, these are not comedies. They are simply full of the stuff we all laugh at, which is mostly the awful stuff. I instantly read the rest of his work. Within his people, the failed, the lonely, the battered and dented, the confused and even the downright nasty, there is always a spark, a decency, lost but remembered, and possibly even mourned. A spark in the hearts of those who wander his labyrinthine corridors, below and above ground. A suspicion that if you poke about hard enough, the most human part of us all can be found. Mick Herron's worlds are murky and corrupt, full of Dante-esque coils and less poetic, sulfuric whiffs. Sometimes visions of this kind can lower the spirits, invoke an unwelcome chill, and, especially these days, the scent of unpleasant, even violent turbulence in the human web. But I've never finished a single one of his books, all of which I have read and reread, without feeling hopeful. In brief, he can make muddy waters shine. When I was asked, many years later, to play Zoe Beam, who first appears in the book you are about to read or reread, it was as though I'd been invited to walk through that high, child memory wall, away from the sunny street, into his familiar but strange and bittersweet world. Like Alice, I accepted the invitation, and my adventures have been many. Some hilarious, some chilling. Zoe, in her leather carapace, her shit-kicker boots, and her armoured soul, has been quite the companion. May you find this book as irresistible as I did all those years ago. And may you find the common spark of laughter and of compassion in the murk, like spots of bioluminescence in the Thames.
To my mother, and in memory of my father. When he opened his eyes, he expected to find all the light squeezed from the world. But no, he was alive still. Strapped to a bed in a sterile room, angry red claws of pain scratching channels in his flesh. "They have tied me down to keep me from shredding myself," he managed, in a moment of clarity. "To prevent me ripping the skin from my bones and not stopping until I'm dead." This was a good thought. It pretended they had his welfare in mind. But the pain remained, like being chewed by fire ants. And even when he slept, he felt it working in his dreams. In his dreams, he was back in the desert. His companions were dead soldiers, their meat dropping off their bones. The loudest thing in life was a helicopter. All around, the boy soldiers disintegrated, made puddles in the sand. Here, when he was awake, there were other noises to occupy him. Outside his room, he imagined a long corridor of swept tiles and white light, an echoey tunnel that carried sounds past his door, some of which lingered to mock his boredom. A dropped fork rattled in his mind for hours. He heard voices too, a low mumble that never separated into language, and once he thought he heard Tommy, thought he recognised a man he knew in a noise mostly animal, a rising scream, cut off by a slammed door. Footsteps clattered into distance. Something on wheels might have been a trolley. He tried to shout a response, but his voice got lost in the deep red caverns of his pain, and all he could do was weep silent tears that scorched his cheeks. A doctor came once a day. He had to be a doctor. He wore a white coat. The nurse with him carried a tray, on it a precise array of tools, different sized needles, small bottles of coloured liquids. Both nurse and doctor wore gloves and surgical masks,